this is Things You Learn in Therapy. And I'm excited about this conversation because this is exactly what you learn in therapy. Some of the things we're going to talk about today, whether that is couples therapy or individual therapy or family therapy, we're talking about conflict. And we spend a lot of time in therapy talking about conflict and how to handle it well. And so I'm your host, Dr. Beth Trammell. I'm a licensed psychologist and an associate professor of psychology at Indiana University East. And I also am the director of the Master's in Mental Health Counseling program. So I really love therapy. I love helping people in therapy, but I also love training therapists. And frankly, if I'm being real honest, I love being the host of this podcast because I get to talk to other therapists. It's just so, frankly, self-serving. Okay, anyway, this isn't about me. Rachel is back. You were with us in the first season and had so many good things to say about couples, but basically just relationships. And so I'm really excited for what we're going to talk about today. Before we jump in, Rachel, tell us a little about you and another fun thing about you, like we did last time.
Oh man, I can't even remember what my fun thing was. So it might sound the same again if you remember me. Awesome. I'm Rachel Elder. I'm a couples therapist in Washington State and now Florida State. So that's a new thing since last time. So serving couples in Washington and Florida. I also do some coaching, business coaching for therapists, but then relationship coaching as well. I'm a mom to a 2.5-year-old who totally pushed my buttons this morning. So feeling a little frazzled because of how our morning started. And I'm also a wife to an entrepreneur. So our whole house is in that entrepreneurial mindset and overwhelm constantly. Fun fact, I can touch my tongue to my nose. I'm guessing I didn't share that last time.
I don't remember knowing that about you. That's such a fun fact.
Fun little party trick.
You know, hey, look, you probably were the life of the party.
I'm a good hostess. I'm an Enneagram too. So I'm definitely the person like, do you have enough to drink? Do you have enough food? There's not enough food out. And my husband's like, there's too much food. Like, we're going to be fine.
Calm down. It's fine.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's so fun. Yeah. And don't 2.5-year-olds have like this superpower? It's like, how much power can be in one little body that they just basically like ruined the whole morning? I mean,
Yeah. I mean, I keep reminding myself, like, I'm the parent. I'm in control of myself. How am I letting this little human like derail me? But they know how to push your buttons, even at 2.5. I'm terrified for the teenage years because I'm getting a little sense of what it might look like.
You know, I work so much with kids and families and parents and I have 4 kids of my own. So I live and breathe the same struggle every day that it's like, you know, even when you think, you know, you don't really know what it like the day in, day out, and no one can really teach you, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, even me as a therapist who specializes in that, it's still like, man, you know, sometimes I can't really prepare you for all the things.
Mm-mm. And you can be as prepared as you'd like, but really just having that grace and compassion of I did my best. And if I didn't, I can try better tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's the most helpful thing I found for myself.
And even though we know what maybe we're supposed to do, we're still like human beings with emotions that step into all these things that it's like, I know what I'm supposed to do is this, but I'm so like kind of caught up in my own feelings that I can't quite do the right thing.
Yep.
And actually, now that I'm kind of going there, that may be a good segue into what we're talking about today.
Yep.
Because I have to believe that that is also part of the problem with conflict. So last time you came on, we were kind of talking about 3 C's, and one of them we're going to talk in more depth today. So get us started. What are we doing today?
So I want to talk about how to make conflict work for you versus against you, because I think that is kind of the mindset that conflict is a negative. We want to get rid of it. And I'm going to speak a little bit how conflict can be impactful and useful and so needed in relationships.
Okay. So can we just start right now debunking the myth that so many listeners are going to have in their head? When I hear conflict and I hear you, you know, it's why I was so intrigued and I was so excited about this conversation, because I think about so many people that are like, conflict never works. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So yeah. I love that we're going to say, actually, we not only say it works, but actually we're saying we want it to happen. Mm-hmm. Like we need conflict to happen in a healthy way. And that's the difference, right? The difference from all the folks who might already be thinking conflict will never work. It's because they haven't had healthy conflict. Mm-hmm. Tell us what that means.
Conflict's inevitable. It's going to happen. Even if we try so hard to avoid it or try to be so positive, it just happens. Whether it's someone cutting you off in traffic, you saying something that it's interpreted in the wrong way, it just happens whether we make it happen or not. So it's inevitable. If we can change our mindset to recognize that conflict's a part of being human, we're meant to make mistakes, we're meant to fail, we're meant to say the wrong thing in the wrong moment and have someone react, takes that first layer off of, okay, this is okay for it to happen. It's fine for it to happen. Does it feel great? No. Can we start to make it feel great? Sure. It takes some work, but conflict is just a part of being human, which is such a validating and normalizing piece if we can embrace it.
If we're not having conflict, then we're probably not being real in our relationship. Mm-hmm. Even just logically, you know, even just logically, because it's a human experience, you know, you're never going to agree all the time mm-hmm. with someone who has a different lived experience than you. I mean, it's just not even logically possible. I think people, when you talk logically about it, I think it makes sense, but then I think they still try to avoid it and pretend like it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Why do we do that?
It's learned behavior. I don't have anything specific from my life where I'm like, oh, I learned this, but I think there's this mentality or society's view that conflict's a negative.
Yeah.
So don't engage with it. Don't deal with it. Try to minimize it or avoid it. And then it becomes that conflict's negative versus conflict is a part of living. My personality versus your personality. We're getting along right now. I could say something in this conversation that could impact you in a negative way, that could produce some conflict without any intention behind it. And I think that's where intention versus impact comes into play. Sometimes we intentionally create conflict. A lot of the time we unintentionally create it. Mm. And that becomes the struggle of how do we navigate conflict that wasn't intentional, that was an honest mistake, or our personality differences, our view of the world differently, and have productive and effective conversations around that. Intentional conflict's like a whole different, I think, conversation in itself. I am really speaking more to these unintentional conflicts that happen, or they're not conscious of, I'm going to say this to hurt, to cause pain, but that can be the end result.
Okay, so let's start there. Great. So I didn't mean for it to hurt your feelings. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is a perfect way that millions of couples have started conflict.
Yep.
And I could imagine how quickly it becomes derailed because the person says it was unintentional. And they say that by saying something like, well, I didn't mean it that way, or I didn't intend for it to hurt you, or you're too sensitive. I didn't mean. So how do we help folks not become defensive with unintentional conflict?
Mm-hmm. I kind of break this down into three steps.
Step one.
Yeah.
I'm ready. I'm taking my notes.
Change your mindset, which is embracing that conflict happens. But also I like to help people say, like, if your partner is bringing this to you, you hurt my feelings. What an opportunity to learn something about them and an opportunity to learn how you impact them, even if it's not positive.
Yeah.
So changing your mindset of, I don't have to take this as criticism. I don't have to get defensive. It might happen, but saying, oh, my partner's bringing something to me. This is something for us to grow and learn in. How can I show up and be curious, be open to what they're saying, not be judgmental, but really take it in and think about it. So I think that's that first step of my partner's coming to me. How can I be curious about this with them?
Great. There was a book I read. I don't remember what it was. I'd rather be curious than correct. Right. I mean, I think that that's kind of the same sentiment, right? That I don't want to be right. I want to be curious about what it is.
Yeah, I just wrote something down the other day that if you are essentially like if you're playing the I'm right game in your relationship, you've already lost.
You're already done.
Yep. Yeah. So that's if that's the goal there, then yep, conflict's not going to work for you. You've lost the game.
That's right. Just stop right now.
Just stop. It'd be so nice. It was that easy.
I know, right? And then everybody walks away and has their tea and they're fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Back to real world. Step two. What are you saying?
Step two. So this is for both parties, but if you were the one bringing in the conflict, be direct and specific. This happened. It made me feel this way. I need this. So I might have brought this in last time, but there's a go-to phrase I like to give couples is I appreciate blank. I feel blank. I need blank. Starting with that, I appreciate makes it a little bit positive. Even if it's like, I appreciate you being open to hearing me out, or I appreciate you sitting down with me right now and talking about this with me.
Yeah.
It brings your partner or whoever you're sitting with into it of like, oh, you recognize that I'm making an intentionality and an effort here.
Yeah.
I feel hurt. I feel confused. I feel blamed. I feel criticized. I feel defensive, whatever. You could fill in the blank there. I feel hurt when you don't spend as much time with me as you do out in the garage. I need more quality time. I need to understand what you're doing out there that takes away from us, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But the being direct and specific with how you're being impacted, or even how you are taking in what your partner's bringing to you, or your friend, your parent, your child. Being direct and specific helps kind of diffuse the conflict becoming bigger.
Yeah.
It's great. Because if you're conflict avoidant or you have that sense that conflict's bad, you're probably saying too much to get your point across. And then the last step is to be open and curious. So we're bringing that curiosity back in.
Yeah.
But to be open to what the other person's sharing, but to also be open to how you're being impacted too. What is this bringing up for me? Can I be curious about that? Or being open that this was your partner's experience. Was it your intention? No. Is this how they were impacted? Yes. Can you be curious and open to their experience versus being stuck in your reality or your experience of, well, that wasn't my intention, or that's not how I saw it, or that's not how I felt about it. That's fine. You don't have to feel the same way. Can you be open and curious, which brings in that validation, empathizing? Wow, like that sucks. If that's really how you were impacted by that, it wasn't my intention, but I can hear that you're hurting. It really sucks. I wouldn't want to feel that way either.
That's kind of what you were saying with like intention versus impact, right? Focused less on this is what I intended and more on this is how it was impacting you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you start defending your intention, you're totally not listening to the other person because they're not, unless they're telling you like this was your intention, then how we navigate it's a little bit different. But typically someone's bringing how they're feeling, what their experience was. Even if that wasn't your intention, that's what we're healing. That's what we're repairing. That's what we're trying to mend in the conflict. It's also valuable data. Mm. Oh, wow. That's how that impacted you. I don't get how it impacted you in that way, but you're bringing me something that's super helpful for me to be mindful of, to be curious about, to consider, and how I do relationship with you.
So I just, you know, want to throw this out there that within step two of being direct and specific, I guess what you're also not saying is, you know, this includes not bringing up the score sheet. You know, well, you always do this, and this is the 50th time that you've been in the garage and you always ignore us. Being direct and specific is also like being right now about what's happening right in this moment.
Yes. The more that you can be in the moment here and now, it's a little bit easier to navigate conflict. I think you can also be direct and specific with naming a pattern you're seeing too.
Mm.
But I think that's the piece of not you always or you never.
Yeah.
For me, this feels like it's happening a lot more often. Maybe that's not your experience, but for me, I feel like every single weekend this month, you've been out in the garage more than you've been connecting with us as a family.
Yeah.
That might just be how I'm experiencing it, but that's how it's impacting me. I feel like you love the garage more than you love me.
Mm.
I need time with you.
And I imagine that statement next to, you always are in the garage and you're nothing but focused on the garage. And, you know, it's a much different feel mm-hmm. when you can, you know, be vulnerable and share that direct and specific while also being open and curious.
Yeah. You know, to make conflict work for each person, there has to be ownership on both sides. Even if it's the ownership of that wasn't my intention, or the ownership of your feelings, how you're experiencing the situation or the here and now experience. When we start to point the fingers or try to describe what someone else's intention was, we've also lost. We're making the conflict bigger than it needs to be, because we're essentially probably hiding from vulnerability of saying, like, you can hurt me. You can make me feel pain. You cannot always make me feel great. And that's really vulnerable yeah. to name someone can impact you in that way.
As we were kind of just chatting, the thing I was thinking about is this word trust. We, as therapists, psychologists, we talk a lot about trust. Everybody on the planet knows trust is important in relationships. But I think when I really push folks to think about, how do you define trust? How does it start? How does it grow? You know, we know when trust is broken, but I'm not sure we're great at communicating what trust looks like when it's done well, and in a way that somebody else can understand, right? You know, it's like, well, I just don't trust them. I think it's hard. I think about trust in relation to conflict, and like, it takes trust in the relationship to be vulnerable enough to do conflict well. Mm-hmm. But I also believe conflict can be a kickstarter to trust, and it can be an igniter of more trust. So yes. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this whole like trust conflict piece?
It's a big question. I'm in agreement with a lot of what you said. I think the hard part, you know, I'm thinking about couples I've worked with, or just when I'm facing this kind of dynamic with people of, you're asking me to be vulnerable when I don't trust them. Mm. And I think trust is a risk taking process too. And so there's that piece that each party has to decide, can I take a little risk step, or can I leap a little bit and see how this plays out? And this might just be my mentality of how I walk people through this, because if you're stuck in the place of, I can't trust them, so I can't do this, you've made a decision in a way of what kind of relationship you can have with this person. And a lot of times people are waiting for the other person to do all this work before they now take that step. But it comes back to that reminder that you are in control of your own life, your own needs. If you need trust, you have to communicate what that looks like to build that back up. Mm. If you're waiting for the other person to just get it, you're going to be stuck in that reality. And I think this is where people, that mind reading, they just want, I've said it once, so you should remember forever. The person sitting across from you is most likely a human who is typically thinking about their own world more than yours.
Yeah.
Which sucks, especially in a relationship. You want your partner to be thinking about you all the time. However, are you thinking about them all the time? No. So why is the expectation that they just know the first time, or they be thinking about you all the time if you're not doing the same? So I feel like our humanity is not brought into our relationships as much as it needs to be.
Well, you just dropped that. Let's keep going there.
Yeah. I work with couples, and conflict is normally the reason they're coming in.
Yeah.
If they're in conflict, they're probably not communicating well, they're not connecting, and it's really sticky. And so when I'm sitting across from people, I sometimes just want to shake them and just like, look, you are upset with them about something that you do as well.
Yeah.
It's okay for you to be upset. Can you communicate what you're needing right now? And then the excuses come up, or the walls of why I can't trust them come up. Well, I've already told them before. Or I've said this for 15 years. Okay. Say it one more time, and then say it again and again and again and again. If you want this relationship to work, it does require you to do something. Even if it's repetitive, it can be frustrating. But if you want to be in this, you still have to show up, and you have to to take ownership that these are your needs and they don't have to be your partner's needs. They do need to honor and respect them, but they may not feel the same way as you. So when it comes to building that trust, you got to keep telling them what you need. And if you stop, can you see how that's a decision for yourself that I can't be in relationship with this person? Or I've decided they're not worthy of having this piece of me, and that that's going to impact the goal you have. But I don't think people want to confront their own part in it. That I'm human, they're human. This is messy and complicated, and I'm only responsible for myself.
It's part of why I wanted to expand what your thoughts were there, because this came up. We were kind of having dinner with some friends and we were playing this question and answer kind of game. You know, it's what you do when you're friends with a psychologist, you know, play question and answer games. So one of the questions that came up is, you know, what is an essential part of marriage? And everybody kind of went around and shared what they think is essential. And one of the things that I shared really relates to this idea of humanity, in that I think I agree. Conflict is a part of building healthy relationship, doing it well. If you're not having any conflict, I tend to, you know, worry what's really going on, because you just can't be two humans together and get along that well. But you have to just let some things go. Like, yeah, not everything has to be a conflict, right? So I've talked with people and I've been in relationships with people where they just, everything has to be talked about, or, you know, everything that bothers me about you, I need to confront you with, because, you know, if it bothers me, then you should know about it. And I'm just not sure that's true, Rachel. I mean, no. I'm just not sure that's true, that I need to take everything that bothers me and bring it up to you, because if I'm doing that, then all I'm really doing, I mean, the message I'm sending is you need to be more like me. Because this bothers me and you should be less bothersome.
Yeah.
But really, it's only me. Silly things, right? I think about silly things that when you cohabitate with someone in a relationship, you know, like things just come up, like they leave their stuff everywhere or they, you know, have a particular thing. And it's like, you don't have to let all of that bother you, or it can bother you, but you don't have to say it.
Yeah. I've been seeing this theme a lot in my life of that just because I have an emotion doesn't mean I have to do something about it. Sometimes doing something about it is just feeling it and letting it kind of ride the wave. The other piece I've been confronted, I don't know if you're familiar with human design.
Yeah.
I've really like dived into this world in the last year. And so I did a design reading to understand my daughter's design and my husband's design, and what our designs are in our family, how they work together, how they don't. And the interesting thing with my husband's design and mine is that, like, I am definitely like, I can get way more done in a day.
Yeah. Than
probably anybody should. That's just how I work. And his design is that, like, in the perfect world, he's only meant to work like 2 to 3 hours a day. Like,
yeah.
That's his efficiency. And when I was doing the design reading and her name was Kelly, Kelly says this to me, I was like, oh my God. Our relationship makes a lot of sense. Cause I'm like, what, we got into this weekend. I was working with him in his business and he's like, I'm just going to be so tired tomorrow. And I'm like, I did it with you today. Like, I'm going to be just as tired as you, but I wasn't tired. Like
no.
He was like, it was in his mood. It was in his body. Like he was tired. And I'm like, let's start another day with a gigantic to-do list. Like I'm ready to do it. And it was a good reminder of like, right, I am me and he is him. He is he. And I was attracted to our differences. I wanted to be in relationship with him because we are different. We have similarities. We need some, but I have been trying to make him me.
Yep.
And no wonder I'm in conflict all the time because he's not me. I've been reading a book by Terry Real, his newest one. I have never read any of his books, but there was a quote that stuck out that he's like, part of being a relationship is allowing for each person to be a relational being. And that we often start to try to be in relationship with ourselves instead of another person.
Mm.
I feel like connects to what you were saying of like, I can feel this way and someone else not feel this way. And that doesn't mean that I have the right way or they have the wrong way, but that this is me and this is them. we get to decide the boundaries. Can I be friendship, or can I be in a friendship with this person? Can I talk about these things with this person? Can I be in a partnership with this person? But I think we start to now live in this world that there's too many differences. So we must not be compatible, instead of really looking, well, how did the differences work for us? We just see the negative.
That's so true. And, you know, a quote that comes from the book Radical Candor, that I've probably talked about, people have heard me talk about before, but one of them is, leave three unimportant things unsaid every day. Mm. Like, it's a really tangible, and I think about this as a parent too, you know, like there's so many things that we correct in our kids. And some of them are important and necessary, and some of them are unimportant and probably can be left unsaid.
Yeah.
So I think about in both my partnership with my husband, but also, you know, the relationship I have with my kids. And I really do try to think about that every day. Is this grievance that I have, you know, this irritation that I have, something that needs to be said, or can it be left unsaid? And if it's left unsaid, I think this is a point that you were kind of making. I can't then tuck that away as ammunition later, mm-hmm. right? Like if I've left it unsaid, I'm saying it's unimportant and I'm not bringing it up later, yep. right? It's not like, oh, I'm not saying it today, but I'm going to say it tomorrow when I'm pissed off at you. Like that is not at the heart of what this is. If you are letting it be unimportant, you're actually just letting it be totally out of your world.
I think there's kind of going back to trusting yourself too. The things that are really important to you are going to keep showing up.
Yeah.
So is it really important to like make a comment about how to cook the pasta? Probably not. But if it really is, guess what? It'll pop up over and over and over again till you can't let it go.
You know, something that I like comes up in my relationship. This is just you and I just chatting and no one else is listening. Driving. In my head, right? We live in like a kind of a, it's not the hugest city in the world, right? You know, we live in Indiana. There's like a trillion ways that you can get anywhere. But in my head, there's one right way. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to the store, if we're going to a restaurant, you know, if my husband were driving, it's part of why I think he's just like started letting me drive everywhere, because he just doesn't want to hear it. And I've been trying to do better. But honestly, if he's driving, I have to make an intentional thought in my head not to be like, why are we going this way? Mm-hmm. Like literally, what a stupid thing to be like bothered by. Of all the things to be worried about, why on earth does it matter which path we're taking? Especially if we're like not in a hurry or we're not going to be late. Like it's just literally a different path to go there.
Yeah.
And yet it has been a conflict more times than I probably should say out loud, Rachel.
Relatable example you could bring, because we all have an example like this.
You know, Beth, just sit down and just close your eyes for a second and stay focused. Like, there are so many other things I could do besides make a comment about our path to Applebee's or wherever.
Mine is the honking at people.
Oh, gravy.
I don't want this to mess up their day. Maybe they're having a hard day. And the true reality is I don't remember anyone honking at me, right? The other person, they might remember it for a millisecond, but that we get in such a huge, I'm like, stop honking.
Oh my God.
It doesn't matter. But it's the little things like that though, that build up over time and really cause harm in our relationships.
It's why we're bringing up these kind of silly examples, because you and I both know we have sat across from couples or individual people that have had this experience, that they come with this example that has built up over time to, she doesn't respect me.
Yeah.
She doesn't think I'm capable. She thinks that she's better at everything than me. He doesn't trust me. He doesn't love me. He just criticizes me and my driving. It is those moments, right, that turn into the big statements that, you know, once that seed is planted in your mind as a potential narrative, he doesn't love me, he doesn't trust me, she doesn't respect me. It just takes a little planting of that seed. And man, those thoughts that kind of fuel that seed and help that seed grow.
Or the inner critic that is building it up faster and faster.
it you and I both know because we've seen it. And I know I've probably experienced it firsthand, you know, where, wow, I've really built this narrative in my mind that is probably not even close to the truth.
Yeah.
And that's how we start conflict. That's how we continue conflict.
Yeah. And once it's, once it's got a whole ball moving, it's hard to stop it and change it. And that's, I mean, you know, I get people who ask me, well, how long is it going to take us to like meet our goal? It's, you know, maybe this amount of time, but usually it's when I tell people when we get to this conflict part, you know, sometimes it feels like we're ramping up, things are getting better because it's just the approach I use and it feels really good. We're improving communication, we're connecting a little bit more, and then we get to conflict. And it does feel like we go backwards a little bit because once we're here, we're doing the real work now. We're confronting the personality differences, the learned behaviors, the ways you view the world differently. We're confronting those little moments that have built up over time that now have this message of I'm not enough, you're not worthy, you don't love me. And it's probably the most vulnerable part of the work we do.
Yeah. So what's your take on repetitive conflict? You know, the argument that comes up a lot, right? I've talked to couples, they're like, it's kind of the same argument. Why can't we just resolve this? You know, I just get angrier and angrier every time it comes up. How do you help couples that maybe have that recurring argument?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is where I bring in the research from the Gottmans. And this is where I kind of, you know, my Make Conflict Work For You guide, the Change Your Mindset. 69% of our conflict's not resolvable, which means it is going to be repetitive.
Yeah.
Those here we go again conversations. We have to learn how to recognize that this is a part of being in relationship. So instead of fighting against it, how do we let that work for us?
Mm.
And you know what, there's resources that the Gottmans created that I walk people through, but the key component is to recognize that every time it's coming up, there's something more to understand. Even if you're saying we've had this conversation before, the curiosity and the openness to say, what can I learn new this time? What can I take in that maybe I didn't take in before? Or what has my partner processed and unraveled more for themselves that they want me to understand now too? And compromise. These, here we go again, the repetitive, we're going to have to keep compromising. And sometimes we come up with the go-to one that works forever. But most things in our relationships don't work forever. They work for a season or a period of time or a day. We have to keep coming back to that drawing board and saying, okay, here's your need. Here's mine. What is the compromise or the problem or the solution we come up together that supports both of those? But I might've talked about this in the last episode. What we typically do is we sacrifice our need to meet the other's need. And then the conflict comes up even bigger because now we have resentment and regret in the process of it. So if we're really compromising, it is honoring both parties' needs.
Okay, so here's the other thing I love about what you said, that 69% of conflict isn't resolvable. So the message that I think people feel when conflict reoccurs is we must be broken, right? Our relationship must be broken. We're doing something wrong because we can't resolve this conflict. What you're saying is the most well-known, well-researched, well-renowned researcher on the planet, John Gottman in the Gottman Institute, says almost 70% of conflicts aren't resolvable. That's not couples. That's conflict. So this issue that's in front of us is not ever going to be resolved. Mm-hmm. I think there's something really powerful in making sure people hear that part of the message, right? That you're not broken necessarily, but this conflict, it might feel like it's broken because the conflict, there's no answer.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, kind of in my brain, if I wish I could show the PowerPoint, it's the layers of conflict. Mm. So is the conflict between you and the person sitting across from you, or is the conflict actually with someone else and the conflict's playing out with the person who's sitting across from you? I think we experience that as therapists a lot, what we call enactments of our clients are angry or frustrated or hurt by us, even though we didn't do anything or what we didn't create that feeling for them. It was another story coming into play. There's that part. There's the part of you're both different people, personality differences. Personalities are meant to clash at times. So you're going to have conflict. There's the way you just view the world differently. Your mind is your own mind. The other person's mind is their own mind. You're going to see things differently. You're going to bump against each other. I mean, there's all these different categories with conflict. And we get so focused on how do we solve this problem? Does it actually need to be a problem? Or can it be more of, can I understand you better? And if we don't come up with a solution, that's okay. But I understand you in another level.
What it seems to me is that, you know, we have become kind of divided as a country in a lot of kind of hot issues, right? Like really big topics. We've become more and more divided. And I think that has taught some of us how to tolerate those people who are on the other side of the divide from us. I don't love the divide. I wish that there wasn't a divide, but I know that Uncle Larry, I don't have an Uncle Larry, but I'm just, for example, Uncle Larry, he just thinks this thing about this thing and he and I are never going to agree. I think we're starting to like see and kind of accept Uncle Larry. I mean, what we're saying here is 70% of the conflicts are like Uncle Larry. They're not resolvable. I'm never going to convince Uncle Larry to be on my side of things. It's unresolvable. So I can accept that. Well, how come I can't accept that in my romantic relationship? Why is that in us that it's harder for us to allow an unresolved conflict in our romantic relationship? But yeah, Uncle Larry, he just thinks that certain thing. And to what you just said, like, I just know with Uncle Larry, I'm not going to talk to him about this, or I'm not going to do this with him. I've set boundaries with him. Why can't I do that? And why doesn't that happen as often?
Yeah. I mean, this is definitely my own like personal thought, but I think we've learned that to have an intimate, healthy relationship that's in an intimate relationship, it means we have to agree on core values and core issues. And I just don't think that's what we should be believing.
Yeah.
If that's the truth, then my marriage shouldn't work out. We have plenty of different values. We have plenty of different views of the world that do not go hand in hand. I just choose to say, like, you're allowed to have those views and differences. It's my responsibility to keep making sure that I get to have my values and views in this relationship. It's okay if you don't always get it or you don't have the same belief. But do I still get to show up as my authentic self? And do you get to show up as your authentic selves? And we can be relational with one another. That doesn't always work out for everyone. So I want to put that preference of sometimes recognizing that as I don't get to be myself and you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Is this truly healthy for us?
Yeah.
Is there some conversations that we can have around this? But we don't have to be the same to have a healthy, intimate relationship.
I think it's great. And I think, you know, to have an intimate relationship, it's okay to disagree.
Yeah.
I think that's such an important thing to have people hear, you know, like intimacy, connection doesn't mean sameness.
Mm-hmm.
I think on a logical level, we understand that. We know that, you know, it's like, I know he's different. I know she's different, but, you know, I can like just picture all the trailing off. All right. So you have a free guide on your website, which is awesome. And I want you to tell people about that, but you also have something so exciting coming up that I want for you to tell people about. So tell us all the things and how we can find out and register.
Yes. So I have a Make Conflict Work For You guide. We talked about like the three components. It is a guide. So there's some ways to help you break it down and apply it. So much more that we probably touched on, but didn't go super in depth. So that's on my website, rachel-elder.com. You can find that guide as well as some others also on the website. This has been a dream since probably a long time, but definitely on a piece of paper on my corkboard to the right of me right now, leading couples retreats. And then I think this is like 2019 when I made that list, and then the pandemic hit. So travel, you know, wasn't happening as much. But travel is happening a little bit more. And I'm actually in a place where I feel like I have the capacity because I'm not in new mom territory. Well, I'll always be there, but not in the newborn, new mom territory. So I'm going to be leading my first couples retreat May 4th through 7th of 2023. So it's a little ways out, but it is going to be a long weekend. It's 4 days, 3 nights at an all-inclusive resort in Cancun. We actually get access to both resorts. So there's a more relaxing, peaceful side that we'll be staying on. But then we have access to more of the kind of entertainment party, if that's kind of your style. But the whole retreat is meant for couples to come and relax, connect, play, because I think that's so critical in our relationships. An all-inclusive place to stay, drinks, food, all there, pools, beach access, entertainment. The first, Friday, Saturday morning from 9 to noon, Cancun time, there will be a workshop with skills to build your relationship stronger. So we will be talking about communication. We will be touching on conflict and a lot of what we talked about today and connection, kind of future planning for the relationship. Each couple will also plan a date to hold for one another. So it's going to be kind of, I don't know if you're Bachelor fans, but Bachelor in Paradise, you're going to get a date card from me that you helped create. And your partner has to go do the date you created for them. Fine. So I kind of pulled this part into of sometimes we only want to go on the dates we want to go on.
Yeah.
But letting our partners take us on adventures that maybe we would not normally say yes to and trying it out.
Yeah.
And then the evening's optional, whether you just want intimate time, the two of you, there'll be some optional group connection activities too, for those people who want more of that. And then you leave on Sunday, you head home, hopefully with skills to repeat and to take action on, and hopefully feeling somewhat rested and more connected too.
It sounds incredible. I looked it up on your website already and saw all that was included. And it's really exciting for you. I know last time you were kind of working on getting all the pieces together. And so I'm so thankful that you've gotten that all done so that we can talk about it and share with folks here.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me share about it.
And May 4th, 2023 is going to be here before we know it.
I know. It seems so far away right now, but I'll probably be like, oh my gosh, it came so quickly.
I know. It's funny when I just said that out loud, you had kind of a response, you know, of like, oh, you're right. It's actually not that far away.
It feels so far away to me, but I'm like, yeah, you're right. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't have enough time. I need more time.
I know. It's like, well, yeah, I mean, 9 months, 10 months. Anyway. Okay. You're going to be totally ready. You're going to have a full house. It's going to be awesome. People are going to be having all sorts of fun and intimacy and learning so many good things. So
yeah,
thank you for coming to share these pieces. Cause I do think, you know, even if you're a person who's listening, who's not maybe in a romantic relationship right now, these apply to every relationship. And whether it's a work relationship, kids, parents, I mean, this stuff is for everyone.
Yeah.
So thank you for saying
the seed. You said something. I'm like, well, maybe we need to come back a third time, but what are the essentials for marriage? I think that would be a fascinating conversation for us to have.
I love this. And I can share, well, I guess I could ask permission to share what some of the people said in our group, or it'd be fun to like have people email us.
Yeah.
What do they think is essential? And then we can kind of, that would be fun.
That would be really fun.
You know, I think there is that thing that Gottman would say and other, you know, couples experts. And then I think there's what people have experienced that may kind of load underneath some of those things, you know, but what matters in marriage? That's a good one. We're going to do that next episode. That's going to happen.
Yeah. We got to get some voices.
I know. It's going to be great. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. And I hope y'all are going to register for an amazing couples retreat.
Thanks, Beth.
All right. Take care.